Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Come for Supper. I'm Alexandra Dudley, food writer, cook, and serial dinner party host. So I thought it'd be fun to sit down with people who share that love for food, chat about life, and learn a little bit more about how they like to serve supper. I speak to chefs, restaurateurs, artists, actors, authors, and pretty much anyone who likes to entertain. If you're new to the podcast, make sure you click subscribe. And if you enjoy it, rate it, review it, share it, and tell your friends, as it makes all the difference. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. Good evening, everybody, and thank you all for coming to tonight's Come for Supper. So this evening, we have two very special guests, a couple who have fed us incredibly well for the last 7 years with their colourful, comforting, and glorious food. Beginning with a humble site in Fitzrovia, they are now parents of three, Honey & Co., Honey & Spice, and Honey & Smoke. And their food has captured the hearts and stomachs of many and has led on to three cookbooks and a food column. They also have an appetite for conversation and have their own series of Honey & Co. food talks, which, like tonight, you can also listen to as a podcast. I'm so thrilled to welcome them onto Come for Supper. Welcome, Sarit Packer and Itamar Strolovich.
Hello. Thank you so much. It's so nice to hear someone say nice things about you. Yeah. It's really nice.
I could have gone on longer, but yeah, I'm always...
No, please do. We don't often get it. When we come to work, I think it's the opposite. Yeah. We just have...
mostly get told off.
You need to have it play. You know what? Once this is recorded, you can just play it as you enter the restaurant.
Yes.
That's what you should do.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's get speakers.
So how are you both, and where have you come from this evening?
We're very well. We came from college.
Yeah,
we've gone back to college in our old age, but we learned ceramics.
Oh, so cool. Ceramics college.
Yeah.
Oh, pottery. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
So I want to go back a little bit to the beginning and delve into your love story and ask, where did you meet and what was it that brought you both together?
We met in a kitchen, surprisingly. It seems to be the only place we've been for the last 20 years. we were working actually in an Italian restaurant in Israel, because at the time, which was like 17 years ago, Israel wasn't really cooking any kind of local food. It was mostly looking to the West for food, and it was an Italian restaurant, and I was working there, and Itamar kind of...
Sort of wafted in and out in a very casual manner.
Very late, usually.
Yeah, I was kind of almost freelancing in that kitchen. I was very uncommitted, very uncommitted.
He didn't bring the love into that kitchen, I have to say. And we kind of started hanging out in the same group of friends, but really it was a very slow burn in terms of us getting together. He was quite annoying, and I was quite annoying.
Yeah, we're still waiting for this. Still burning slowly.
It's burning slowly.
No, but you know what? 17 years, it's not bad.
And you talk in your book so vividly about food and kind of food memories. I saw something today that was saying that recipes are really stories. And I think you definitely do that incredibly well. I wondered if you could both perhaps share one of your kind of early stories that surrounds food, your earliest memories.
For me, I have like really strong memories of cooking with my mum in the kitchen. Things that you wouldn't expect, like from very young, like 4 or 5, like helping my mom mince meat. She had like this crazy, you know, Kenwood attachment.
Machine,
and, yeah. And it was the most exciting thing for me as a kid to just put those pieces there and see them come out as these like ugly
like Play-Doh
worms on the other side. I just absolutely loved that. And doing all those kind of things, like, you know, potting peas, all these kind of things that she would just keep me busy with so that I didn't drive her crazy.
Yeah, I think a lot of people who end up working in food tend to have really strong food memories from very early age. I also can't remember a time that I wasn't in the kitchen cooking with anybody who was there, you know, with my mom, my father, my brother, my grandma, everywhere. But I do remember going to a restaurant. I used to love that. Like as mm-hmm. a kid, going out to a restaurant, it's such a luxury and it's so exciting. And I remember the first time we went to a seafood restaurant. I guess I was like 5 or 6, something like that. And the first time I had prawns. And that wow. was just such a revelation.
It was so for me. Actually, mine was just here in Chinatown. And like,
really?
Do you know, there used to be like, yeah, what was it called?
New World.
New World. And we
you know,
did that.
With the trolley world. That with sticks the to the floor that it's so...
Yeah, and we came to London for a visit and my uncle took us out there and we had this like massive table and all these dim sums and he just kept pulling everything off. And I just remember like tasting a prawn, tasting a dim sum for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah, but I always think, you know, it's just like going out was such an exciting thing. Mm-hmm. To a restaurant. And, you know, for us, we're just like, you know, you go somewhere and you drink what you drink, you eat what you eat, you talk a lot. But for a kid, you know, going out, like whenever we have children in the restaurant, it's really hard, especially in Honey & Co. that is so small. Yeah. And you have a child that may be, you know, screaming. But I'm just thinking, you know, this kid maybe will remember this meal all his life.
Yeah.
And it's quite magical. Yeah.
So you both came to London, is it 16 years ago now?
Yeah. Yeah, we got married like that, and moved 2 months after we got married.
Yeah.
So wow, big move.
Yeah. Well, I always say it was a visa marriage because we got
a visa marriage.
Because I have a British passport, and the only way that we could move was to get married. So that was kind of why we got married pretty early on in the relationship, because we knew we wanted to come. Actually, we thought to all of Europe. We thought we were going to do loads of traveling, and we kind of got stuck in the UK for quite, you know. Since
it does but that to you in London,
it kind of absorbs you, and it takes
it's very easy to fall in love with this town, and it's very easy to find a place here.
And it was also easy to travel from here everywhere else, so we didn't feel the need to move again and stuff like that. But anyway, so we kind of did it quickly.
Stayed here, yeah.
And you were working, you were both working in restaurants before setting up Honey & Co. You were both working in restaurants in London as well. What was that enjoyable?
Yeah, I mean...
Yes and no. I mean, if you work... It's not like, you know, don't need to say, you work a line or you work a... It's hard work.
Yeah.
It's hard work. It's very demanding, very unrewarding, you know, financially. And if you work in the wrong place, it can be soul-destroying. Mm. If you don't work in a kitchen that, you know, that gels with you, it can be really difficult. And...
But on the same tack, the ones that do are amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You find your best friends there. You enjoy it. You have this kind of sense of camaraderie and of like really enjoying the food, the process, like everything about it. So it can have both, and we've
had
both.
You learn a lot. You know. Yeah, yeah. So it was a mixed bag, but we were lucky in the sense, you know, that we worked at the OXO, and I think it was an amazing kitchen at the time. I don't know now. We stayed there for a long time and we learned a lot, and then we moved to Ottolenghi. We stayed there for a long time, you know, for years and years we were there, and that was an amazing place, you know, probably still is, but you know, it was an amazing place at the time, and we learned so much. Yeah, so it was I think we were very, very lucky.
Did you feel prepared when you opened Honey & Co? Because I think opening a restaurant is very different to just working on one. It's suddenly you're doing 25 jobs, not just...
I don't think there's anything that prepares you.
Yeah, no, but I think it's a lot like you know, again, on a much smaller scale, like being a parent, nothing really prepares you. And we thought we were prepared. We were very, you know, stupidity helps, I think, and naivety.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, it is bliss, because we thought, yeah, it'd be fine, you know.
Yeah, we thought we'd been managing other kitchens for so long. Yeah. Like, we, you know, we've had our teams, we've hired, we know how to do suppliers. We thought it's as easy as that.
Yeah, but and then like, we opened the doors and we're like, oh, we've never busted a table in our lives. We've never taken an order in our lives.
Because you were working front of house at the beginning, right?
Well, kind of, yeah.
Everyone
was
doing everything.
Yeah, it was...
Well, no, I don't do front of house, but I am not good at it.
Oh my gosh. I feel like you could do it.
Yeah, she's very sweet when she comes out to the table. She's very, very sweet. But
I don't take plates. I just drop them on people. Like, it's a really bad
idea. Well, so you made them. I'm like, if you made the food, no washing up, no kind of waiting.
No, also, I'm really short, so, like, it's really hard to, like, lean over someone and put a plate down.
So this is what we learned in the States. We were just in the States, and they say, pardon my reach.
Pardon my reach.
Yeah.
Okay.
I use that now.
Pardon my reach. Yeah, I'll use that. That's a good one. I reach all the time. It's meant to be rude, isn't it? Reaching. I remember. I remember when it opened. It had this real kind of freshness, but also quite a kind of like homely charm to it. It didn't feel quite like you were sitting in someone's kitchen, but it felt a little bit like a hybrid between a kitchen and a restaurant. And is and in fact, all of them have that. You know, Honey and Smoke, which is so much bigger. There's so much room. You can reach far.
Yeah.
But you know, even that has that kind of homely charm.
Thank you so much.
Is that
you're welcome.
So much, yeah. Thank you. But is that something you that is important to you? Is it something you want your kind of diners to feel?
Yeah, but we didn't have this as a design.
Okay.
We just didn't know any better because we never had a restaurant before. We only knew how to host people at home. So this is what we did.
And actually in Honey & Co., the kitchen downstairs was so domestic that when we kind of took it over, we kind of said, well, the only thing we can cook is the food we cook at home because this can't be fancy. There's no equipment here. There's no space. Like, it has to be something that you would serve at a dinner party at home. And it kind of evolved more and more into feeling like it is just eating in our home. And because it's so small and everyone's kind of touching everyone, then that was...
It just happened.
Yeah.
Your latest book as well, Honey & Co. At Home, which is obviously all about the food that you cook at home. So I hope I'm right in assuming that you like to entertain. Do you guys like to entertain at home?
Yeah.
You like a dinner party?
We really do. For the sole reason, like the biggest reason, is that you can just roll to bed afterwards.
Yeah, that's true.
And you don't need to trek
across. That's why I don't like going out.
Exactly.
Yes. I mean, one of the reasons.
You want to have friends. You want to meet with friends. You want to have nice food. You want to have, you know, drink and talk shit. Sorry.
Yeah.
But you do. This is what you want to do. But what you don't want to do is trek home from Stoke Newington.
No. Yeah.
So people coming over is the best way for us to not have to go anywhere.
Yeah.
So talk me through an evening. What do I get when I come to the
Honeys, the supper?
It depends who you are, you know.
No.
Okay. you've had a lot of time as well. I'm just going to say you both had kind of 4 days off from work. Something's happened.
Excuse me?
Yeah,
what happened?
Yeah. Something happened.
Did we close all the restaurants? Yes.
you've had a lot of time.
Yeah.
So you know you could do whatever you wanted. Maybe you've got kind of seven people coming over. Are there, you know, what is it, starter, main?
We do often forget that we invite people over.
Okay.
It has been known to happen. And then we always say, like, when the book came out, we say, oh, do you know how you invite people over? And then you forget. And we expect everyone to be like, yeah, this happens. But no one ever does. It only happens to us. So we're assuming that we remember that you're coming. This is the assumption, yeah? Very rarely we do starter main type situation.
Yeah, more like sharing.
But often we would have something to give people as they come because you want that. Like if we, you know, if we, it'll be like olives or radishes or vegetables or something like that in a dip. Or if we have time to be more involved, then we will bake something like a cheesy something.
Yum, a cheesy something.
Because also you want to come in, like if you go in somewhere and it smells of like hot cheesy something, immediately, you know, you relax because you know...
The cheese is relaxed.
Yeah, the cheese is, you're going to get hot cheese, so it's fine.
No, and there'll be like a bread or there'll be, you know, there's always like a salad in the idea is at the start that, because we don't like to mess around when people are there. So all this kind of first stage, it tends to be somewhere on the table.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Yeah. And then we like to over-cater.
Yeah.
I think we always over-cater. I don't think that ever we had a situation that we said, oh,
We needed more food.
It never happens. Like, usually we would send people with boxes.
With food, yeah. Nice.
But I think what I am craving to cook now is a recipe that we always bring from back for Christmas in the restaurants, but at home it's better, which is a recipe, a Jordanian recipe that's called mansaf. And it's torture to make. It's like so painful because you need to braise the lamb in lots of spices, and then you take the cooking liquid and you cook rice in that, and you save some and you make a sauce with that. But at the end of it, you have the most gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous plate of food. because the rice takes on that kind of meaty, spicy flavor from the lamb. The lamb is completely melting. The sauce is kind of yogurty and savory. It's stunning. And you have like almonds and raisins on top and parsley.
Yeah.
So if I have like a clear 2 days to cook, I'll do that for you.
Yeah, like a celebration.
It's a celebration. Yeah. And then actually we were in Jordan in the winter and we went to a family home. They cooked it for us, which is, you know, it's a massive deal. And then you eat it with your hands. So you get like a pile of rice, a pile of meat on top, the yogurty sauce, and you eat it standing up.
And one it's hand hot, like really hot.
Really hot. And <they're just> and you stand in a circle around it and you kind of roll little balls of rice and meat.
Oh, that's hot.
Dip it in the sauce and then just like pop it in your mouth. And of course, we were covered in sauce, head to toe. And they were all so elegant, like not a speck of rice anywhere. But it was just magic. It was magic. We will give cutlery.
You'll give cutlery. Yeah. Okay,
you
nice.
Will get cutlery.
We get cutlery. Yeah. Cool. What about pudding? Do you, I mean, because...
Absolutely.
Yeah, sweet, yes. Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say. Yeah, absolutely. Non-negotiable.
It's non-negotiable.
Non-negotiable. And a lot of people say like, you know, oh yeah, casual people coming over, you don't need to offer dessert. They're lying.
Yeah, they're lying. They're lying. I agree.
People, you know, people came to your house from Stoke Newington. They crossed down. You're not going to give them dessert. Are you crazy?
I agree.
I would be like, what are you doing, people?
No, even if there's 20 minutes... to make dinner,
you can do something.
We've just remembered someone's coming, you still have dessert. You have to have dessert.
So what's a kind of foolproof, I've got 20 minutes till someone's coming dessert?
Cookies, chocolate cookies for me.
Wow, that's
all
a
the
kind
time.
Of like last minute thing. Because I didn't think about it. You probably have all the stuff. Always.
Yeah, you
always.
Usually
flour,
you
butter,
have all this
eggs.
Time. You have all this stuff. It doesn't take long.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, after a meal, maybe you don't want like a full elaborate cake something. You want a little something sweet, maybe with coffee, maybe with grappa in my house. There's always grappa.
Yeah.
Also, if there's ice cream in the freezer, then hot cookies, ice cream, grappa,
delicious.
And it's not work. Like making cookies, it's not work. But
well, you don't make them.
Well, for me, it's not work.
Work for me.
For me, it's not work. I do admit.
So, do you ever squabble in the kitchen? You know, sometimes, you know, two cooks in the kitchen can
there,
be a lot.
There are never two cooks in our kitchen.
No,
never,
we don't work together.
Never. Okay, so no, I can't. Never, okay, no. So
we used
not,
to.
We will not squabble in the kitchen because we will not go into the kitchen together.
Yeah, that's agreed understanding.
Now
that's why you've lasted.
Oh yeah.
No, absolutely. We used to cook in the same kitchens all the time for other people. But as soon as we started cooking for ourselves, in the same kitchens or at home, then there's a nice separation.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad I'm not the only one who becomes a nightmare in the kitchen.
No, but because you do want, we've discovered, and this is really strange because we would, you know, at work, for example, we would have, you know, you run a kitchen and people need direction and they need to know what they're doing. Things need to be managed. And then we would focus all our attention towards managing each other and nobody else, nothing else. And of course, we don't want to be managed because we're both
adults.
And we don't need to be told what to do. So we get angry at each other, but nothing happens as we want it. So we get angrier still. Nobody else does anything. So we don't work in the same kitchen anymore. And at home, if somebody goes to cook, then the other would just vanish as far away because they want to enjoy their time not cooking.
Also, someone has to do the washing up afterwards. Yeah. So someone has to not be in the kitchen.
Want to enjoy their time cooking as well.
Yeah.
You just said that's interesting.
And enjoy the time not cooking.
Yeah, but it's interesting to use kind of cooking as a way of kind of winding down. I was reading when you were writing about food, you know, we think of comfort food, but we rarely do we think of comfort cooking. Mm. And you both spend, you know, a lot of time around food, so it's interesting that cooking is a way of kind of winding down.
It is, though, and it's like it can be really relaxing, you know, if it's something you enjoy, you know, it can be, you know, just like your time messing about, you listen to Radio 4, or listen to a podcast, you always listen to a podcast.
Nice.
And you kind of half engaged and half not, and you just unwind.
You mellow out.
Yeah, yeah. And I love, you know, I love also that you have a little project in the kitchen, like that you follow recipe to the letter that is, I don't know, Vietnamese or, you know, something that's not familiar to you. but you're really focused and you measure the tablespoons and you say, what do you mean golden brown and all these things, but you are really following it to the letter and nothing else exists.
Yeah.
And then you're, you know, if it's a good recipe, then you're surprised with the results. Yeah. And you've learned a lot of things on the way.
A little achievement.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's, there's nothing at stake. You know, what's going to happen? A bad meal? Fine. You know.
So what about catastrophes then? What about bad meals? Has there ever been a time, either at home, maybe when entertaining, or in the restaurant where things just went to shit?
Thankfully in the restaurant, yeah. No. But, you know, I mean, you drop things.
Things happen.
This happens. You can burn a whole batch of something. This can happen. This is, you know. But at home, there's been plenty. There's some, like, memorable meals. memorable for all the wrong reasons. Yeah. But Ethan Mawr writes in one in the book, like, really well about one of these evenings where he was trying to surprise me with a kind of very romantic dinner.
We would never do that. But you know how you see, like, on TV, you'd hear, like, you'd be like, oh, yeah, date night. And then she comes back and there's candles and food. And it's like, oh, that's so romantic. And we thought, like, I can never do anything on American TV, but this I can do. Yeah. Like, this is achievable for me. So I tried that and I followed the recipe kind of, like we said, exactly, like measuring and everything. And it was a really, really complicated recipe for a whole fish. It's called Westlake fish. It's a Chinese recipe. And you cut the fish in half lengthwise. And then you have a male side and a female side. And the male side you need to cut in half again. And then you need to poach them in different... A nightmare. But, like, it's not our usual style of cooking, which is, like, chuck it in the pan and run. But I had to do the sauce. And, you know, I drank the sauce because I thought it was my wine. It was just, like, soy and vinegar, and it was horrible. So I had to make it again. And then I was so focused on the making of it that I made a little mistake swapping salt for sugar. Mm-hmm.
And I came...
No, sugar for salt it was. Sugar for salt.
No, yeah, you put salt instead of sugar.
Yeah, so it was four tablespoons of salt instead of sugar, plus all that soy.
The sugar I could have handled. It was taking that first bite. First of all, I was suspicious because why is he making this dinner? Like,
What have you done?
He's having an affair.
Something's happened. I was coming home from work and I'm like, what happened? Like, why are you cooking this meal? What's going on?
Because, you know, you dim the light and I said, I'll do candles and then it doesn't need to be as tidy. As, you know, like, do you know what I mean? Because this is the whole point of candles.
Okay.
But then we had, like, a yucca plant near it that caught fire.
So alarm.
It was like a chain of catastrophes. Mm-hmm. It was
and
really...
And how was the fish then? The salty
so
fish.
So horrible. Like, seriously, I was so excited. It smelled amazing. It looked absolutely beautiful. And
it looks amazing because you put it all back together so it's looked like the whole fish. And it has kind of a glossy... We should try it again sometime.
Kind of scarred, but I took, like, the biggest bite and spat it out.
Oh,
like,
no.
It was so, 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 so salty.
Recipe writing is very, in my eyes, it's very different to cooking because, you know, you're having to kind of, you can't just boil something till it's done. You've got to boil it for 6.5 minutes and you've got to put kind of tablespoons and measuring things out. And I find that quite removed sometimes from the home.
It's the opposite of cooking.
Yeah,
is it reverse engineering?
It is, but it's not frustrating at all because actually we didn't start writing cookbooks until we started hiring chefs to work for us. And all the chefs that we had hired, none of them had the food culture that we had come from. And we still cook without recipes, which they get very angry at us that we do now. But we'll go into a kitchen and just cook with the food because we know it and we know what it's supposed to do and what the stages are. But when we took these chefs on, because we can't do everything, you have to really, really explain to them every stage because you want every time that, even from the basics of hummus, you want every batch of hummus that is made in your restaurant to taste good. Like, it can't sometimes be, you know, crunchy or, it just
can't. Watery.
Or watery or not salted or not lemon. Like, it has to have everything. And you need to really know how to explain to them what that is. And that's how the first book actually came about, because we started writing all the recipes for the restaurant properly, with times, with ovens, with, how you spread it on a tray. Like, ridiculous things. But you need to do that, because otherwise your chefs are lost in, in a world of, what am I supposed to do with this? And you can... I still say this, that you can have six pastry chefs and give them an exact recipe for a cake and end up with six different cakes.
Yeah, that's true.
So you've got to, like, as much as possible, fine-tune those little details on where they can go wrong. And people will still go wrong, and that's okay. There is, like Itamar says, it's just food. It can't go that wrong. It's going to be tasty.
Yeah. And what about your favorite kind of food writers and cookbooks? I know that you like cookbooks.
We love cookbooks.
Yeah. How many cookbooks do you have then? Do you have lots of cookbooks?
Like over 500 now, maybe? Yeah.
It's a problem, isn't it? Cookbook addiction.
It's a problem. Everywhere. And what happens later, and this is even the word we didn't even realize, but when we started doing the podcast, is you start getting sent a whole lot of books as well.
The time.
So, like, there's some people that write beautifully.
Yeah.
So Diana Henry writes beautifully.
Her recipes, though, as well, are also brilliant. Yeah. And like you, they're really informative without being patronizing, which is important.
I think they're very kind of honest to what they are as well.
Rachel Roddy is such a good writer. Oh my God, she writes so well, so imaginative. Simon Hopkinson, I think, is great. I love everything that Jeremy Lee writes. I think he's so funny. Just reading now the Alison Roman's cookbook that just came out. She's funny. Yeah, I think it's nice to have a funny cookbook.
Yeah. But they are, I think they're becoming, like, they really are stories as well, I think.
Yeah, I think they have to be, because, anyone can kind of go on Google and type a name of something they want to cook, and a million variations are going to come up. So the only way a cookbook is viable in any kind of way is if there's a reason to understanding why this food is being cooked somewhere. And I think people are putting a lot more effort into the cookbooks that are being made now.
I think more people are cooking now. I think more people are cooking from cookbooks. I think more people are eating more interesting food from kind of all over the world.
Do you think so? I don't know if it's gone the other way, where people are reading it and aspiring to it, but not actually cooking any of it. So I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting. But you mean just buying the cookbooks to keep their plants up?
Yeah.
It's hard for
you need. I mean, the plants need to be elevated. They need sunlight.
No, but it's hard for us. It's really hard for us to tell, because we live
for food,
breathe, and actually eat in that world. So everything around us, is that. So we're not. I don't think we're good. We're the right people to ask, because for us, this is our universe.
No, but like my sister, I say to her, oh. She says, oh, have you got, like, tell me how to make this. I'm like, you have my cookbook. It's just there. She's like, no, you write too many words. I don't want to read
really?
It.
Really?
This is my sister.
But I think a lot of people also want the kind of easy way. People are always looking for the kind of the cheat way. The funniest thing, I think, is when you've made something really sweet. This happens a lot when I make this kind of chocolate toffee thing. And they're like, what's in it? Tell me what's in it. Hoping that I'll be like rainbows and green vegetables and stardust. And I'm like, chocolate and sugar and butter and nuts. And that's it.
Yeah. It's delicious.
That's it. Yeah. And what about when you're eating out then? When you're not eating in the restaurant and you're not eating at home, where do you like to go and eat out? Where's good to go?
Mm. Well, we tend to eat food that is probably as far removed from the food we cook in the restaurants. So a lot of Asian.
I love a bit of Asian.
Yeah.
I mean, in truth, we always say this is the recurring theme. We always want the easy way home. So we always eat on the Victoria line.
Okay. There's a lot on the Victoria
There's
line.
There's a
lot.
We have a place for every station,
So
have you been to A Wong's?
Yes. Yeah, that's the Victoria one.
That's Victoria.
Yeah, that's Victoria.
What's in Pimlico? Does anyone know anything
Pimlico's
in Pimlico?
Pimlico's the only one we don't have a place to eat.
Oh, I don't know Pimlico.
What is Pimlico? Do you ever see anyone go to Pimlico?
Like, there's that funny... I used to get vintage clothes in Pimlico, but there is...
People go to the Tate.
People go to the Tate, but there's that famous greasy spoon there, isn't there? There's
With the tiles.
Regency Cafe, someone said it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Go
you
there.
You wouldn't go there for dinner, would you? Or is it
but
nice?
I mean, you could do.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. So that's... Really good. Let's have your kind of top two restaurants in London to go to that aren't yours, obviously.
We very rarely go to ours, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's very stressful to eat in your own
restaurant. I know.
All you
can
see
imagine.
Is everything going wrong and somebody forgetting this and that falling and that. Like, it's the worst experience ever. But, wow, favorite is hard because we go by ease. So, like, the closest to us walking distance is Canton Arms and Stockwell Continental, which are kind of the same owners.
So both great,
And they're both great, and we can walk there. So that already puts them quite up, you know.
Yeah.
High up there.
But like special occasion, River Cafe.
Yeah,
like
River
birthday,
Cafe,
River Cafe. Every time.
Yeah.
But we go to Rocca a lot because it's on Charlotte Street. So it's walking distance from work. We're very like simple folk.
Lazy.
It's about how we, you know,
but
how
you, we can if get you, if we like sign a big contract or have like a big deal, then it's Locatelli.
Okay, nice.
Yeah,
Gymkhana
really
for Indians,
nice.
You know. Yeah. Even though it burned, did it reopen after the burning?
No,
anyone know yet?
Oh, I don't know. That was not. That was a sad time.
Yeah,
it's not good. Devastating.
Yeah. Trullo. There's lots of there's lots of really good restaurants.
Trullo is on the Victoria Line. Yeah, Highbury and Islington. It's wrong direction for you guys.
But it's still on the same line, and
closer
that's
to Stoke Newington.
Yeah. But it's the furthest north we go. Is Trullo. Yeah, and Black Axe. Which is
good. So I always like to end these conversations back in the heart of the kitchen, and I wanted to ask. You're going to have to do this together. Maybe. I don't know if I can give you six. But what are your three ingredients that you advise people to always have in their kitchen?
Olive oil.
Olive oil.
It's probably the basics to everything we do.
And good olive oil, like cold. Yeah, good olive oil.
A nice one. And actually, there's a lot of debate about what that is. But for us, it's the kind of very Middle Eastern one where it's quite like green still and
peppery.
Quite young. But it's not. It doesn't have... Well, I shouldn't say this, a lot of Italians will be angry at me. But Italian stuff has like a heat kind of, which it doesn't have any of that. It's just got like a really kind of raw, olivey greenness to it.
Lemons for sure.
Yeah.
Tahini.
Tahini. That's three. There's two of you. Let's go.
Yeah, it could be a little
Let's
bit
go for six.
Cumin.
Cumin we use so
like
much.
Like so much of
cumin
it.
Cumin seeds or
cumin? Seeds, like ground cumin. So it's first of all, it's the base to almost all our spice mixes. And on its own, it's just vital.
So good. Yeah. In a salsa as well, it's so good.
It just, you know, it gives an earthy kind of note to everything. So it just,
Yeah, I think with this, we can work.
You can work with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't always easy to
and
get
chocolate.
Good Middle Eastern.
Garlic. Chocolate.
Chocolate and garlic. We've got it.
Yeah.
We've got
that's
six.
It.
Yeah.
That's six. Is that six?
Yeah.
I think we've hit
even
six.
Though I can even lose garlic for...
chocolate.
Almonds.
Almonds
over garlic.
Yeah. Almonds, you're probably right.
Almonds. It's just like...
Can
it's
go...
A basis
almonds
of
in
a
the rice.
Moist cake
almonds
is like...
Almonds. Delicious. I mean, you can get good tahini these days, but you know, it was a struggle to find good tahini kind of 5 years ago. Did you struggle to get kind of good Middle Eastern ingredients?
Well, we started, you know, you could always get it. It was just like hard to find and expensive. It's now kind of a little bit easier to find, a little bit cheaper. But we would just buy, you know, for the restaurant, we would buy retail Lebanese tahini from Green Valley. And we would pay so much money on it. It's crazy how much money we would pay for it. And then we started kind of beg to get like wholesale prices. And they were like, no. Which why should they? But now we find a wholesale supplier of good Lebanese tahini. So,
there's good tahini. Belazu tahini. For any tahini lovers out there, Belazu
tahini. I've not tried the Belazu one
It's
yet.
Really good.
Yeah?
There's
yeah.
lots of really good ones now. And, I always think the advantage of the UK is you get ingredients...
Yeah.
From all over the world. Because it's an open market. Like, for us growing up...
Well, let's hope.
Yeah, let's wait and see.
For the next 45 minutes or so.
Which, you know, then we might be having a completely different conversation about not having restaurants. But, because we can't get any of the food for them. But here, like, where we grew up, because there's all the issues with politics and everything, we never got this variety of ingredients because there's, like, borders and you can't cross foods. And here, we get stuff from Lebanon, from Iran, from Iraq, from Syria. And sadly, right now, no. But, you know, all these things. And you can get amazing produce here, but you do have to, like, really seek it out. It doesn't, you know... It's not in Tesco's.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's definitely not in Tesco's. So last question then. If you could have three people to your ultimate dinner party, who would you have and why?
Assuming we are both there?
You're both there at the same time. Yeah, okay.
You would be my first choice. Now you return the compliment.
I've spoken to you.
Be like, I want a different three people.
I've spoken to you enough. I'd actually, in the same kind of tone, I'd really like to meet Itamar's father. He passed away before we ever got together. So that would...
Yeah, that's very sweet as well.
That's very moving.
Okay. But I think it's important to know a person. We take for granted that you know that you meet their parents and stuff like that, but we never have. So I would choose him.
That's really nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
We need another two. Is that okay. it?
Ah, and Rachel and Julia, I think. Is probably. That?
yeah. Okay.
And Louisa.
Well, you're going to many people.
Yeah, that's the girls that work with us since we opened.
That's so nice.
Yeah, and they're great. They're so important to everything we do.
Mm-hmm. And what would you cook? The celebration amazing lamb with all the
No, Rachel won't eat that.
Rachel doesn't eat anything.
The fish.
Yeah.
The salty fish.
We'll probably roast the chicken.
Yeah.
Okay, nice.
Something, yeah. It doesn't matter, really.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for that. That was fantastic. It was so brilliant to sit down and chat with you. I could go on forever.
Thank you so much.
But I'm going to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you liked it, rate it, review it, talk about it, share it, and invite your friends round for supper. This has been a Studio 71 production. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.